Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Kaelin Davenport, Associate Professor in Roman History at Macquarie University and Humboldt Research Fellow at Goethe University in Frankfurt, Germany. This is episode CLX, Faustina. As the daughter of the previous emperor, Faustina provided her husband, Marcus Aurelius, with a solid link to the imperial throne. Besides continuity, her time as empress came to embody motherhood, not just to the next emperor, but to the empire as a whole. Here's Kaelin Davenport.
Faustina the Younger is someone who was the daughter, the wife, and a mother of emperors. So she was the daughter of Antoninus Pius, and then she married Marcus Aurelius, and then she had 14 children, one of whom, the only boy to survive to adulthood, became the Emperor Commodus. So she occupies a really important place in the imperial family in the 2nd century AD.
Mm. So much like the previous empress that I've talked about in the podcast, which is Sabina, she is the imperial link between the previous emperor and her husband.
Very much so, yes. Antoninus Pius had 4 children, 2 boys and 2 girls, but Faustina was the only one still living when he became emperor, somewhat unexpectedly, in 138.
So what do we know about her early life then?
Well, we really don't know much about her early life before her father became emperor. So she was born into a wealthy senatorial family. So Antoninus, before he became emperor, was a senator, governor of Asia. Her mother, Faustina the Elder, had even more illustrious heritage. Her father, Marcus Annius Verus, had been consul 3 times, which was now virtually unprecedented for someone who hadn't been emperor. Faustina was born on the 16th of February, probably in 130 AD or thereabouts. Roman women were generally married somewhere between the ages of 12 and 16. So this is the kind of life that Faustina could also anticipate, a marriage to an eligible young senator. But everything changed when she was only 7 years old. Her father plucked from the ranks of the Senate at the age of 51 to be appointed Caesar and heir to the Emperor Hadrian. So Faustina had a role to play as part of Hadrian's arrangements for the succession. So Faustina is betrothed on Hadrian's orders to Lucius Verus, who was about the same age as her, about 7 years old, who was the son of Julius Caesar. This is a bit of unusual sort of betrothal because the male and female partners were about the same age. As I said, there's normally that age disparity.
And Antoninus Pius was adopted, made the next emperor on the kind of condition that he in turn adopts both Marcus Aurelius and Lucius Verus at this point, isn't he?
Yes, exactly. So Lucius Verus is adopted by Antoninus, but also, yes, the teenager who was 17, who was older, who we know as Marcus Aurelius. Marcus is actually Antoninus's nephew, but he was also a favourite of the emperor Hadrian. He is said to have called him Verissimus, my most true one. Also because Marcus had been betrothed to Lucius Verus's sister, Caonia Fabia, since 136. So he was already integrated into this family.
Faustina is 8 years old then when her father becomes emperor and when she's engaged to Lucius Verus, betrothed, yes, intended to marry, but they don't actually get married, do they? These plans change.
No. So everything changes on the death of Hadrian on 10th of July, 138. So Antoninus becomes Augustus. He is given the cognomen Pius by the Senate for his dutifulness in securing Hadrian's deification. Because Hadrian was very unpopular, he'd executed senators at the beginning of his reign and in the last years as well, but Antoninus managed to push through his deification, and because of this, he became known as Pius. So he becomes Augustus. Faustina the Elder, his wife, is awarded the title of Augusta. But it's at this time that Antoninus and his wife decide to change Hadrian's succession arrangement. So they ask Marcus Aurelius to end his betrothal with Caonia Fabia and instead become betrothed to their daughter Faustina instead.
All that we can do is speculate on why this might have happened, but I imagine it's because they saw more promise in Marcus Aurelius as the emperor and wanted their daughter betrothed to the good one.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to know at this stage. I mean, Lucius Verus certainly has a reputation as a playboy in his 20s. At this stage,
but he's eight.
Yeah, so what exactly? I mean, this stage, he's only eight. So goodness knows what his personality was like at that time. It seems that, yes, Marcus is 10 years older. Obviously, he now has to wait several years before actually marrying Faustina, but certainly he would be a more promising heir. Antoninus is now in his 50s, especially if Antoninus died. They're clearly marking out Faustina and Marcus Aurelius as the new imperial couple. There may also have been a sense of prioritizing their own family. So Marcus was the son of Faustina the Elder's brother, Annius Verus. So he was actually their nephew.
But the complication in that is Antoninus Pius has adopted Marcus Aurelius. So that's his adoptive son. Mm. And his daughter is marrying his adoptive son.
Yes, yes. So under Roman law, that would not be permitted. That would be an incestuous relationship. There was probably a legal sleight of hand required, whereas by Faustina was probably adopted into another family to ensure that the marriage would not be incestuous. Antoninus made his intentions clear the following year in 139 when Marcus Aurelius is given the title of Caesar. Lucius Verus never gets this title. So when Antoninus dies, Lucius Verus only becomes co-Augustus with Marcus because Marcus insists on it. So this is marking out Marcus as the one to succeed and that he is married to Faustina. At the time the betrothal was celebrated, coins were minted, the reverse showed large figures of Antoninus and Faustina clasping hands, and between them, smaller figures showing Faustina the Younger and Marcus Aurelius clasping hands. The idea was that dynastic succession and peace and security would continue. Faustina the Elder died by the end of October 140. She was still in her early 40s. Antoninus was stricken with grief. She was deified and a temple was consecrated in the Roman Forum in her honour. This was a major blow for the emperor. He'd lost three children and now he'd lost his wife.
Okay, and we've got an indication as well from which you are quoting from your own book that Antoninus was very fond of his daughter.
Yes, yes. So we know from the letters of Fronto that Faustina was very dear to her father Antoninus. So in 142, Fronto delivered a speech, a panegyric in praise of Antoninus in the Senate. And in this, he mentioned Faustina. We have Antoninus's own words here. "Also, that section of your speech, which I was most pleased to see dedicated to the honour of my Faustina, was even truer than it was eloquent. For the fact of the matter by Hercules is that I would prefer to live with her on Gyara than in the palace without her." And this is number 14 in, yes, the Davenport Manly edition of Fronto's selected letters, available from all good bookshops and paperback. Yes, so, I mean, this is the sense that Fronto stands up in the Senate and he praises the emperor. And there's also a section praising his daughter, which is really interesting. And then Antoninus reveals this personal moment. You know, he's lost his wife, he has no other children, and he'd prefer to live with her on Gyara. This is an island in the site Cyclades, so in the Aegean Sea, to which exiles, political exiles, were usually sent. So he'd rather live in exile with her on a small Greek island rather than be emperor and live in the palace without her.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice sort of indication of the real depth of feeling that he has for his daughter. I should mention, of course, that we don't have Faustina's own words here. So in the letters of Fronto, we have Marcus Aurelius talking about her. We have Fronto talking about her. We have Antoninus talking about her, but we don't have Faustina herself. So we have to reconstruct her life through the views of the men around her, which, of course, is a mythological problem, which we often face with reconstructing the lives of Roman women.
So Faustina is married to Marcus Aurelius in 145 when she is about 15 years old.
They're married when Faustina is 15, as you said. Marcus is 24. The traditional age disparity between aristocratic men and women. I know this seems a bit prurient, but we do know that they both would have been virgins at the time. We know this from Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. Marcus actually writes in his Meditations that he refused the temptations of both slave girls and boys that were offered to him, you know, which is quite an exceptional attitude for the time, and that he reserved a sexual relationship till its proper time. An interesting insight into the mindset of this emperor. The emperors themselves made it a cornerstone of their public image. The idea of fertility and fecundity was promoted. Certainly, you know, if an emperor had lots of children, that was a sign of his virtus, his manliness, and the ability of women to bear children was also publicly celebrated, particularly coming off a series of emperors, Trajan and Hadrian, that had not had children of their own to succeed him. So we find Rome going back to the dynastic impulse, promoting childbearing in the way that we see in the Julio-Claudian period.
Speaking of having children then, Faustina kind of blows all the previous empresses out of the water, I think, with the amount of children that she has.
Modern scholarly estimates of the number of children differ. I'm going to follow Anthony Burley's reconstruction that she had 14 children, including two sets of twins. Some other scholars argue 13, to do with some of the children who died very young and whether they are actually the same child or not. But still, yes, it's a staggering amount of children. The first child, Domitia Faustina, is born on the 30th of November 147. This is immediately celebrated by the imperial house. The next day, December the 1st, Faustina is given the title of Augusta, which puts her on the same level as her father, Antoninus. Marcus is already Caesar, but he's awarded imperium, and he's also awarded tribunician power, tribunitia potestas, two components of imperial powers, which bring him closer in status to his father Antoninus. But he's not made Augustus. So this is really interesting. Faustina actually outranks her husband. She is an Augusta, he is a Caesar, and that she's given this honor because she is born a child to carry on the dynasty. Coins are minted immediately, showing Faustina on the obverse, the place of honor. Some give her the title of Faustina the Augusta, while others give her the title of Faustina the Augusta, the daughter of Pius Augustus, which, you know, really shows her prominence. So over the next 23 years, from 147 to 170, Faustina and Marcus Aurelius, as I mentioned, had 14 children. So this would meant that between the ages of 17 and 40, Faustina would have spent approximately half her life pregnant. And, you know, this would have been very difficult, medically speaking, as well. Many of the babies died in infancy, but also many women died during pregnancy or during childbirth as well. So this was incredibly hazardous to Faustina's health as well. And she had two sets of twins. They're also much more dangerous pregnancies than a single pregnancy. We know that the first pair of twins, two boys, died the same year they were born. and the later set of twins, one of them died when he was only a young boy as well. So, you know, she wouldn't have gotten the modern medical care. Twins are often delivered early. One twin is usually smaller than the other one as well. So these are all complications for both Faustina and for her children as well.
So we don't have her personal writings, but we do have letters to and from Fronto and Marcus's meditations. So are they writing about what Faustina's going through in this kind of time?
We do have a sense, particularly of the illnesses which Faustina and the children suffered. So as I said, their first daughter was Domitia Faustina, born in 147. In a letter to Fronto, selected letters number 23, Marcus writes, "She was sick with diarrhea and fever. She was not eating and she was thin." And he says that he and Faustina have been completely occupied looking after her. Mm-hmm. And of course, all children get, you know, temperatures and have diarrhea and things like that. But in the ancient world, you know, without the same level of medical care, these illnesses could become fatal. And we do know that Domitia Faustina sadly died aged 4 in 151. The early years of the marriage must have been filled with quite a bit of sadness. I mean, Marcus writes with great affection about his children, but not only did Domitia Faustina, their daughter, die, the next two boys, the twins Aurelius Antoninus and Aelius Aurelius, died in 149, the same year they were born. There was some happiness a few years later with the birth of daughter Lucilla in 150 and Aurelia Faustina in 151, two little girls who did survive. And their birthdays, we know, were celebrated at court. So Fronto was expected to attend as a senator and an aristocrat, but he often can't go because of his own illnesses. So he sends letters of excuses to Marcus. And so in selected letters 25, Fronto says, "Give your Faustina my best wishes and congratulate her and kiss our ladies in my name. And as I am accustomed to, kiss their feet and hands." Fronto going and doting on Faustina and her daughters, a nice sort of counterbalance to the sadness that Faustina and Marcus must have felt in the early years of their marriage.
One nice touch about this is that every time it seems that Faustina has a child, her imperial portraits are changing.
Yes, so we know this thanks to the efforts of a German archaeologist called Klaus Fitschen, who published a book on the portrait types of Faustina, and he identified 9 portrait types in all, so there isn't quite enough for each child. I think the last child, Vibia Sabina, born in 170, isn't associated with the portrait type. But we know that the first one comes out in 147, the year of Domitia Faustina's birth. And over time, we see subtle changes in Faustina. The face is recognizably the same, the eyes, the nose. It does become a bit rounder or fuller, a woman who is maturing. Her hair shows development from a style where they have sort of crimped segments with the bun at the back, and then gradually the bun creeps further up her head, which makes Faustina the Younger resemble her mother, Faustina the Elder. And then we start to get the helmet-style wave, which is a forerunner of Julia Domna's magnificent hair. We do see this evolution of her image, but the fact that new ones are being commissioned to celebrate the births of her children speaks to the significance of childbearing to her public image. The best attested type is actually type 7 from 161, which is the year that Commodus and his twin brother Aurelius Fulvus Antoninus were born, and it's also the year that Marcus Aurelius became Augustus. So there clearly was an increase in production of imperial sculpture in that year. So 28 versions of type 7 have been identified by Klaus Fitschen. So it's clearly a big moment.
The writings that we've got from Marcus Aurelius, do we get a sense of the relationship that there was between them at this point?
Yeah, so we have contemporary letters which Marcus exchanged with Fronto, as well as his later reflections written in the 170s, which appear in his Meditations. His writings praise Faustina for being an ideal wife. So on one occasion when she was sick, he wrote to Fronto, and this is selected letters 27, "Faustina has had a fever today too, and I feel I've actually noticed it more today. But God's willing, she puts my mind at rest, since she follows my wishes so obediently." This idea was that he was head of the household and that his wife was obedient to him and needed to follow his orders. We find similar sentiments in the Meditations. Book 1, chapter 17, he says, he's thankful, and I quote, "that my wife is such as she is, so obedient, so affectionate, so straightforward." There's love there, but at the same time, one of Marcus's conceptions is that Faustina was a good wife because she obeys him. Quite an interesting insight into the values of a Roman marriage.
So how did things change for Faustina when Marcus Aurelius finally became emperor?
Antoninus Pius dies in March of 161. Marcus Aurelius becomes Augustus, and he insists that Lucius Verus also become Augustus. At the time, Lucius is 30 and he's unmarried. So he is betrothed to Marcus and Faustina's eldest surviving daughter, Lucilla, who's only 12. They are married 2 years later in Ephesus when Verus is on his way to the Parthian front. And Lucilla is given the title of Augusta at the time of their marriage. So this is a way of giving her equivalence with her husband. The first ramification of Marcus becoming emperor for Faustina was that her daughter was married off in a similar situation to herself. Now, as you mentioned, Faustina is already pregnant with twins, Antoninus and Commodus, when her father dies. They are born that same year on 31st of August. Coins are minted depicting Faustina holding the twins in her arms while two younger girls stand at her feet looking up at her. And there's a company with the legend Fecunditas Augustae, fertility of the Augusta. And other coins show the twins, Antoninus and Commodus, on a pulvina, a royal couch. They have the legend Cycle Felicitas, the happiness of the age. Twin births in which the baby survived were very rare in the ancient world, and they were seen as especially lucky because this means stability. The succession issues that happened at the end of Trajan's reign and of Hadrian's reign were times of anxiety. Children, especially boys, and you know, marriages, and then more children, this signifies, you know, peace and stability for the empire.
So a lot of Marcus Aurelius's reign was spent going around the empire securing the borders. And for a lot of that, Faustina was going on the road with him. So how did her role of Augusta transition to one that's almost a bit more military-based?
Yes, yeah, so their lives very much changed from the late 160s onwards with the crossing of tribes such as the Marcomanni and the Quadi across the Rhine and Danubian frontiers into Roman territory. And this meant that Marcus and initially Lucius Verus had to take to the field. Marcus had not campaigned in person before. Lucius Verus dies of a stroke in 169, which means that Lucilla is now unmarried. And Marcus Aurelius decides that Lucilla should marry one of his generals, who is now in his 50s, Claudius Pompeianus. He was a widower and had his own children. And we're told that both Lucilla and Faustina the Younger protested this marriage because Pompeianus was so much older. And indeed, there are stories in the Historia Augusta that the women did not think Pompeianus was distinguished enough. He was a senator, but he was a son of an equestrian, whereas Lucilla was an Augusta and the daughter of an Augusta. But Marcus wanted to see Lucilla married, and particularly to one of his most trusted generals. So we see this combination of family and military concerns there. Marcus is based on the Danubian front for much of the early 170s. He is at Carnuntum from 170 to 173, and then at Sirmium from 173 to 175. Now, Faustina initially remained behind at Rome, pregnant with her 14th child, Vibia Aurelia Sabina, born around 170. However, she is attested as travelling to Sirmium by 174, along with their daughter Sabina. And we hear that she is attested advising her husband behind the scenes in the trial of Herodes Atticus, which takes place at Sirmium.
Right, so she joins him rather quickly once Sabina is maybe old enough to travel.
That's
by
right.
The sounds of it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You just said advising her husband as well, which is the first time we've had any indication of something like that.
It's reported in quite a hostile fashion by Philostratus in his account of Herodes Atticus. He says, "You have sacrificed me to the whim of a woman and a three-year-old child," because both Faustina and three-year-old daughter Sabina are both said to have persuaded Marcus to rule against Herodes. But we do have a sense of the fact that Faustina's advice mattered to Marcus through this incident.
So it's around this time then that she gets the title of Mother of the Camp, isn't it? So can you tell me about that being awarded? And it is quite a significant occurrence, isn't it?
Yeah, so we were told about this in an almost offhanded manner by Cassius Dio, that Faustina, because she's accompanying Marcus on his campaign now, is given this title of Mater Castrorum, Mother of the Camps. And it seems to have been a way to commemorate the fact that she was sort of sharing the trials and the campaigns with her husband. Coins were minted showing her enthroned next to three standards there. There had been attachments between military groups and the wives of generals before, for example, Agrippina, the wife of Germanicus. But you know, this takes things to a whole new level and formalize it. The idea that the emperor is the general, he commanding the army, but that his wife, the Augusta, also takes this maternal role. With both of them, the imperial family united, that military success will be achieved.
So not long after she gets the title of Mother in the Camp, in 175, we've got Marcus Aurelius becoming seriously ill, which must have been of a concern to Faustina the Younger because her children are quite young.
Yes. So we know about what happens now, thanks to the account of Cassius Dio, who's writing the 3rd century, but he was alive at this time. And he sort of gives us an inside reading of Faustina's mind, or what people thought was going through Faustina's mind. The idea that Marcus is ill, she has 5 girls, her sole surviving son is the 13-year-old Commodus, and we're told by Dio that Faustina thought that he was too young and too foolish to be a successful emperor, and that she feared a power struggle for the imperial throne. Now, to what extent this is concocted after Commodus proved to be such a dreadful emperor is unknown. Faustina's position was fairly secure, given the fact that the Antonine house had ruled now for decades, but there may have been a sense that she wanted to forestall any potential problems. And we hear from Cassius Dio that Faustina wrote to the governor of Syria, Avidius Cassius, a general who had served successfully in the Parthian Wars of Lucius Verus. And she asked him to assume the purple if Marcus died, and secondly, to marry her. So she essentially is offering him the empire by marriage to her. I find this a very peculiar story. I'm never quite sure what to make of it, I must honestly say, because we know so little about backroom court politics at the time to determine whether Faustina genuinely felt threatened and wanted to take precautions, or whether this is a hostile later reading. we don't know. But what happens is that Cassius soon receives a false report that Marcus has died. And so, in April of 175, he is declared emperor by his troops. News soon reaches him that Marcus has not died, and finding himself in this position, he does not back down and basically is now in revolt against Marcus. He's murdered a few months later by his own troops, and the revolt ends. But it was very dangerous for Marcus. Vinius Cassius, the governor of Syria, that's the top Roman commander in the east, and we know that he also launched a bid to control Egypt, which meant the grain supply to Rome. Now, Marcus Aurelius, in response, marches from the Danubian frontier to the east with Faustina, and he gives Commodus, who's already Caesar, but he gives him the toga virilis, the toga of manhood, to show that, you know, my son is ready to assume the purple if anything happens to me. On their way to the east, Faustina dies at Halala in Cappadocia, probably in the summer of 176. She is probably only 46 at this time. Now, Cassius Dio says that she either died from gout or that she committed suicide to avoid being convicted of being involved in the revolt of Avidius Cassius.
Those are two very different causes of death there.
Yes, exactly.
But Dio kind of has form of saying, you know, here's something that is completely believable, but I'm also going to give you something implausible, and I'm not going to make it clear which one of them is the truth. He's got form doing that.
Well, I think the issue is that rumours circulated soon after Faustina's death about her involvement in the revolt of Vinius Cassius. And I wonder if these rumours started because Marcus, and we're told he was stricken with grief at Faustina's death, a woman who's been married to for over 30 years. He's had children with her. We sense this real bond of affection. He forbade investigation into those who supported Avidius Cassius and, exercising clemency, did not want them tried in the Senate. Documents that belonged to Cassius were burnt and were not made public. One of the explanations for Marcus's clemency was that Faustina was involved and that he did not want news of her involvement to become public. Otherwise, people are saying, you know, why was he so generous to the senators who had supported a revolt against him? This does fit into a pattern of rumours often blaming imperial women for larger political problems. He showed his grief, Faustina's death, publicly in a number of ways. He renamed Halala, where she died, Faustinopolis after her. The Senate decreed that silver images of Marcus and Faustina should be erected in the Temple of Venus in Roma, and so that when men and women married, they should offer sacrifices. The ideal of Faustina and Marcus is this perfect imperial couple. That a golden statue of Faustina should be carried into the theatre whenever the emperor Marcus was there as well, and that women were to sit around it. She was being honoured quite ostentatiously, but at the same time, there was certainly rumour and speculation that she had somehow been involved.
So when Marcus Aurelius went to the games, he sat with a golden statue of Faustina.
Yes.
That's really quite sad.
I think it's quite sad. I mean, it's a way of honouring her, but at the same time, you know, essentially there's an effigy of his dead wife placed there as well. It's strange the way grieving was commemorated in ancient Rome if you're a member of the imperial family. You know, from my reading of the evidence, they had a long and happy marriage.
Okay, so I like that we've made it this far into the podcast without having to bring up the Historia Augusta. So what lovely things does that tome have to tell us about the legacy of Faustina.
Okay, so the Historia Augusta was written in the late 4th century, so we're a couple of hundred years later. It's thought that it relied on earlier scandalous biographies written by Marius Maximus. And the main determining factor in Faustina's presentation, she's used as an explanation for how an emperor such as Marcus Aurelius, this great philosopher king, could have produced a son like Commodus. And this is clearly something that people thought about. I mean, in the 3rd century, Cassius Dio said that Marcus Aurelius' one mistake was bequeathing the empire to Commodus. So stories obviously developed in the later tradition that Faustina was an adulteress. She had fathered Commodus in an affair with a gladiator, which hence explains his gladiatorial leanings. You know, she used to stand by the docks and, you know, wait for sailors to come into port to have affairs with them. So there's the idea that, you know, Commodus can be explained by the fact that he was not Marcus's son. And in order to do this, they needed to smear Faustina. And it's not only the author of the Historia Augusta who thought this in the 4th century. It's interesting, the Emperor Julian, whose little book, The Caesars, talks about his imperial predecessors, says that Marcus, and I'll quote, would not ignore his errors of judgment in the case of his son and his wife, in that he mourned the latter beyond what was becoming, especially considering that she was not even a virtuous woman. We get no hint of this in any of the letters or Marcus's own meditations, but, you know, in later years, you know, even an emperor like Julian thinks, you know, how did we end up with Commodus? All the blame goes on Faustina.
But I guess during her own lifetime, the story that was stressed all the time was almost that she was fertile, that she was producing an important legacy for the Roman Empire just by continuing to have children.
Yes, you know, this was her public image, you know, the coins, you know, the sculpture. It's about fertility, fecundity. You must think, you know, the pressure that would place on someone as well. I mean, you often find the pressure on imperial women to have children, and this happens all throughout the Roman Empire and, you know, in other monarchies as well, that work in the dynastic fashion, is that if there is something wrong, if someone doesn't have children, the explanation is it must be the woman's fault. She's obviously done something wrong. They don't have an understanding of, you know, how infertility works, or they don't have an understanding about male infertility. It's all down to the woman. And so the idea that correspondingly, if someone like Faustina is able to produce, you know, 14 children, then that says something positive about her inner virtue as well.
And so she had 5 daughters and Commodus that survived to adulthood.
That's right.
And I guess this is her direct legacy for the Roman Empire. So, well, we know what happens to Commodus. Mm. What happens to the rest of the children of Marcus Aurelius and Faustina?
Obviously, some of them outlive Commodus. You know, we're now in the Severan period. They can be interpreted both as a threat and a benefit. So, for example, their daughter Cornificia was forced to commit suicide by Caracalla as part of his clear out of members of the Antonine family that could pose a challenge to him. However, he didn't get everyone. So Faustina and Marcus's great-granddaughter, Annia Aurelia Faustina, was one of the wives of Elagabalus. So the name continued to have great value. And certainly the Severan women, such as Julia Domna, who was also Mater Castrorum, you know, was celebrated for having Caracalla and Geta, her two sons. They were modelled on this image of imperial fertility and motherhood, which Faustina had promoted. I think it's really interesting to remember that Faustina was the daughter of an emperor, the wife of an emperor, and the mother of an emperor. But I think we should also remember that she was an important person, important individual in her own right. She was given the title of Augusta in 147, 14 years before Marcus became Augustus himself. So she was valued for who she was as a member of the Antonine dynasty.
That's Dr. Kaelin Davenport, Associate Professor in Roman History at Macquarie University and Humboldt Research Fellow at Goethe University in Frankfurt, Germany. And you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. Please leave a review. As always, they are very appreciated. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both myself and Kaelin on Twitter. Kaelin is at Dr. C. Davenport. I am at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. That's it today for Emperors of Rome. In the next episode, we will finish off our look at the Empresses of Rome with the Severan Dynasty and the Syrian Matriarchy. So until then, I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.